Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, we might just have witnessed the end of Andy Murray's career. We might not have done. It's classic Andy Murray. But what we do know is we've seen classic Andy Murray over the last 4 hours. Catherine, this is the Tennis Podcast, if you hadn't already guessed it. We are here after just an amazing night here at the Australian Open. It's only day one, but it's our fourth Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. And I'm pretty lost for words, which is not very helpful on a podcast, but that was one of the most exhilarating, special nights here at the Australian Open in the 15 editions of it that I've covered.
Yeah, do you need you're lost for words, so you've thrown it over to me,
yeah.
Who's also lost for words.
That's right.
An absolutely remarkable evening for so many different reasons. I mean, Andy Murray says that was his favourite match of all that he's played at the
Australian
Open. He said that in the press conference.
Wow.
Just now. So that's it, isn't it?
Yep.
He said it's a match that I lost, and obviously he feels terrible now. His overwhelming feeling is sadness, and yet that was his favourite match.
Well,
that's everything. We don't need words.
We've
been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph.
I would imagine that 99.9% of those of you who are listening to this will have seen the match or heard commentary of the match or read about the match and know what happened. But just in case, the rundown of it as I saw it, and I commentated on it for BBC Radio, the first two sets were just depressing viewing, really. They were what we've come to expect from Andy Murray matches of late, of him labouring, of him stumbling around the court, unable to do what he used to do, while Roberto Bautista played a very nice brand of consistent tennis the way that he does. And it just felt that it would inevitably end with a bit of a whimper and be all a bit depressing, really, albeit that we would celebrate Andy Murray as he has given so much to the sport and the memories that we take with us. Then he dug into history, I felt. It was almost like he went back into his career to drag out the sort of performance that defined him as a tennis player. To win set three on a tiebreak, I do not know how. He won set four on a tiebreak, I do not know how. And it was so uplifting to witness him do what he does. I know he didn't win, but he did win. That's how I ended up feeling about it. It didn't matter that he lost on the scorecard. He gave everybody watching and listening, and he gave himself what he used to be.
Yeah, he said to me just now in an interview that, I mean, this is obviously absolutely not what he was feeling on the court when the competitive juices were flowing as quickly and you know, as much as, you know, in any competitor in any sport ever. But he just said to me, it's a relief I didn't win because I wouldn't have been able to play my next match.
Yeah.
You know, he he struggled to get up onto the stool
for the interview.
He was in agony. And I know adrenaline is a very powerful drug and it can mask an awful lot of pain, but, you know, he would have been feeling that adrenaline when he walked out onto court for that incredible ovation. You know, I think the pain is so acute that even adrenaline can only do so much for him. And yeah, he said in his press conference, I shouldn't have been able to play that well, and he said, I was only able to play that well because I knew it was a one-off.
Yeah.
Because I was able to let myself go.
I don't have to do it tomorrow. I don't have to get ready for another match.
He says he hasn't done that for 2 years. He says he's felt nervous about practices for 2 years. He said he admitted how nervous he felt before that practice with Novak Djokovic on Thursday that we're all still baffled about why that ended up happening. Yeah, because he hasn't been able to... He's always been holding back for fear of doing further damage to his hip. And tonight he said... I mean, which is a pretty bleak thing to say, but he just said... He said, you know, to hell with it. My hip's gone. Yeah. Doesn't matter what I do to it now. It's all about tonight.
Yeah, he was prepared to be carried out tonight. And...
I mean, he all but was carried into that interview room, really. Seeing a superhuman athlete and somebody of his stature in every possible way walk like that is astonishing.
Yeah,
really.
I feel like tonight is the first time I've really understood how it affects his normal life, that injury. Because when he walked past me on his way to the interview room, and he was walking in slow motion, it seemed, I was on my way to the commentary box, and in the press conference room, he seemed so miserable about the idea of having to live like this much longer.
He said, I'm dreading walking my dogs. You know it's bad when you're dreading walking your dog. I mean, wow. Yes.
But the tennis he found in himself, what was interesting, I mean, the fighting spirit he has, I mean, we talk about it all the time, but he just is a dog with a bone, isn't he? He will not let go. And I think as well, I mean, it really... We were exchanging messages, and I know you get it gets you when you see family members. But every time they showed, I mean, Judy was just this combination of just enormous pride in her eyes and enjoying seeing him do it again. You know, play the hits one last time. You know,
yeah. It was Jamie that got me, Jamie Murray. I can understand why he's not been a regular in the box over the years for both their sakes.
And he does say that, doesn't he? He says, I can't watch him. I find it so hard to watch him.
Yeah. and he's not got a good poker face about it.
No.
I mean, every time the director cut to him, I got to the point where I had to look away because it was affecting me so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, all I can do is obliquely try and imagine what it would be like seeing my brother in that situation. And, of course, I empathise as much as it's possible to. But, yeah, it is all of that stuff that gets me. You know, when Andy said in the press conference just now, I think the most poignant thing he said was, I'd really hope to be able to keep playing long enough for my daughter, his eldest daughter, to watch me and understand what I've done. And I realise now that almost certainly won't happen.
Mm.
And look, there's probably a handful of people listening going, what's he got to worry about? He's a three-time Grand Slam champion and a multi-millionaire, and he's got this lovely family and everything's going to be fine, and he's got millions of possibilities of what he can do after his career. But none of that matters when you've got your heart set on your daughter watching you play tennis, and you realise that's never going
to
happen.
Well, you certainly have to come to terms with that, don't you, if you're in his position, and that's where he stands. But that's the biggest thing for me is I actually, in that fifth set, I described the fourth set tiebreak, and there was a part of me that was thinking, I hope he doesn't win, really, because I don't want us to try and have this again, because you can't. I remember when Andre Agassi beat Marcus Baghdatis somehow in his 36th year in 2006, and that was a bit like tonight, and he got the win. And then he came out against Benjamin Becker, and he just couldn't do it again. You know, he'd emptied the tank.
Benjamin Becker, the perennial answer to a tennis quiz question.
Yeah, but Murray tonight, and that's the thing. That, and then you had another classic Murray, which is seconds before they're about to run the ultimate videotape with the most schmaltzy tribute and montage to his career and all these players in this montage, he says, well, I'm going to do my very best to be back here next year.
Roll VT.
Which is just, again, it's classic Andy Murray, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they had to do something. The idea of a video for him was fantastic. I think maybe they boxed themselves in with the tone of the video being goodbye. I think maybe it could have been a slightly more uplifting, like, this is my favourite Andy Murray memory. I don't know. It's very easy in hindsight,
it
isn't
is
it?
Easy. But his press conference was such that he made you feel this is it, and yet actually the specific, if you want to be a lawyer about it and look at the actual wording, you could see that there was room for manoeuvre. What was it, wriggle room, as Simon called it?
It's definitely wriggle room.
Hmm. I mean, you can always change your mind too, you can do whatever you like, but
he said he's got two options. It's take 4.5 months off and just rest for that 4.5 months. I mean, I assume, like, keep up a certain level of fitness, but not train relentlessly. It's take 4.5 months off and then come back for a short lead up on grass, which I assume would be Queens, maybe one other, and then try and play Wimbledon and have his farewell there. Or he has the surgery, this hip resurfacing surgery, immediately, which sounds pretty bleak. I mean, it is very close to a hip replacement. And he accepts that almost certainly means he'll never play professional tennis again, but he also knows that it's not an absolute. No doctors are saying it's physically impossible. Bob Bryan is planning to come back. That's doubles. It is different, but it's obviously not sort of a different order of magnitude level of possibility to come back. So those he sees as two options. He says he'll make the decision in the next week. But he also says that the quality and tone and feel of tonight's match will be a factor in his decision. The fact that that feels like an apt final match to him. If it could just have been transplanted to Wimbledon, and that's nothing against Australian Open, he's so effusive about how much he loves it here, and he really does mean it.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's missing from it is a farewell. I think. And he did say he will factor that into his decision making.
I imagine he has mixed feelings. He's split. He's torn between, as you say. He said tonight that he's happy with that as a match. If that's the farewell, that's fine. And that's how I felt during the match. I was just really pleased that everybody got to feel Andy Murray in a match again.
Don't put us through it again at Wimbledon, Andy.
But at the same time, you know, what better way to finish your career as well than go to the grass of Queens, where he's won it 5 times, and then go to Wimbledon, where he made history. You know, so I can see it from both sides. It's up to him. He's going to have to. He'll work that out, and I'm sure whichever one he goes for will work out. I would hope, anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing him talk about regret tonight. I don't think any regrets in terms of achievements, but he talked about overtraining at periods of his career.
He talked, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really in depth about that and sort of. We think of Andy Murray as very stubborn, you know, very willful and stubborn and a contrarian. But he talked about sort of on reflection, perhaps having needed to have stood up for himself a bit more and spoken out and said, "No, I don't want to train today. I'm in pain, or I need a rest." Or actually, he sort of followed suit a bit too much, which is. That's an Andy Murray that, you know, we don't necessarily always see.
He didn't name names, did he?
No.
I mean, who knows who he was referring to specifically? But, and look, everybody's trying to do their job in Team Murray and all for the best. But, at the same time, I can imagine that you might look back at your career, especially when he obviously genuinely feels it's been curtailed and he feels it didn't need to be. We don't know that. We don't know whether his body might have just in fact given up, you know, even if he'd done less in his career physically. But I'm really relieved that he had what he had tonight. I know he's sore and it'll take a while to physically recover, etc., but that is an indelible memory for me. That will never be forgotten.
Yeah, well, those were exactly his words, weren't they? And I suspect that moment when he came out to serve to stay in it, 1-5 down in the fifth final set, I suspect that will be the single moment that endures the most.
Yeah.
When the whole crowd inside the High Sands Arena, which was the exact same crowd that had been there throughout, I don't think anyone even went for a wee.
No, nobody dared, because it was one of those sort of ground passes.
Yeah. There's no allocated seating. If you go for a wee, you lose your seat.
I wonder why everybody was crossing their legs.
They all stood on their feet and cheered for him and chanted his name, and he somehow held it together. I think that was another reason why partially he was sort of slightly more pragmatic Andy Murray, in that I think they were expecting Friday's Andy Murray from that press conference to be the one that they got in that post-match interview. And look, he wasn't mechanical or anything. He was, you could see there was emotion there, but he was composed and actually quite pragmatic. And I think possibly that moment at 5-1, 1-5 was such an outpouring. That
it was beautiful,
got some
wasn't
of it?
It
off his
because
chest.
It was so.
That was a moment when I closed my eyes and didn't look at the cutaways to Jamie and the box.
It was such a natural moment as well. It was just from the heart, from the crowd, and it was really lovely. Really lovely.
Harriet Dart was in his box tonight. Katie Swan was in his box. What a thing for two young tennis players to witness. Katie Swan, of course, part of his management company, mentored by him. What a if anything's going to set an example to you in every possible way for your career ahead, then it was the 4.5 hours tonight.
Yeah. So, that's Andy Murray. Well done, Roberta Bautista-Agut, who goes through to face John Millman. I actually got asked, we had Kim Clijsters in our commentary box today. Kim Clijsters said to me, "Who does Andy Murray play if he wins this?" I said, "I haven't got a clue."
I had not looked.
I just thought, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not about that.
Another reason I'm glad he didn't win, because it's really impossible to cheer against John Millman.
I know. Irritating, that, isn't it? But yeah, it's,
poor old Roberto Bautista Agut, though, is going to have the blooming crowd against him again.
He took it well, didn't he? Do a nice job.
Oh, bless him.
He was lovely in his post-match press comments.
He was the perfect foil, wasn't he? Because it did not get to him one bit. Or if it did, and I genuinely don't think it did.
No, he was great.
He didn't let it show. Bless him, he played his part perfectly, despite the fact that David Law described him as a villain, a masked villain or something.
Cold-eyed
assassin on the radio.
And then I called him a quivering rabbit behind the stony mask. Anyway, I was getting
For a bloke that's lost for words,
I was getting a bit
quivering rabbit.
Well, that was when I was on air. I'm not, you know. Anyway, so that's Andy Murray. Well done, Andy. Glad you had the experience you had. I know you're not listening to this probably, but anyway, I'm talking just generally. I'm delighted that that ended up as it was in the end.
Here's a cool fact.
A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What about the rest of the day? I mean, it feels
Aubrey
like
tennis has
it
feels
like about 3 days ago that we were talking about Katie Poulter. Remember that? Katie Poulter, everybody, today won.
I mean, it was actually yesterday.
Yeah.
What time is it?
It is after 1. It's 1:15 in the morning, folks. This is the dedication we have to you here on the Tennis Podcast.
Kickstarter Matt is having a baptism of Australian
Grad
open
Matt,
fire.
I'll tell you, Grad Matt has been here since about 9 o'clock this morning. I mean, his enthusiasm is off the scale. This is what you've done, folks, by kickstarting us. You brought Grad Matt in. Here he is, way after his bedtime. He's here at 1:15 in the morning. Should say, how long we got until Kickstarter closes? About 12 hours. About 12 hours, folks. So if you want to take us on at the predictions, you still can. If you want to just do your bit and, I don't know, buy Grad Matt a beer, get Catherine a cheese board.
Can't I have a beer?
No, you can't have a beer. You're a cheese board
with
person.
My cheese.
Yeah.
Beer
so,
and cheese.
Anyway, but yeah, you've got about 12 hours to go, folks. So kickstarter.com, search for the Tennis Podcast. So Katie Poulter, she had this win today, and my goodness,
It was yesterday.
All right, yesterday. Wasn't she brilliant?
She was really great.
I did not know she had that in her.
Yeah, what a ball striker. What a ball striker. She really...
That bit I knew she had in her. I knew she was a ball striker. She won the first set 6-love. This is against Ekaterina Makarova, who's a very, very good player. The bit that I was really shocked by was I thought, right, Makarova is just going to try and drag her into a third set, into the trenches, make it awkward. And it was so hot today, wasn't it? It was 35 degrees Celsius, and they were playing in at the heat as it was building. And I thought, if the moment it went into a third set, I thought, no chance Poulter wins this. I mean, I was completely wrong. She stuck in, and she ended up getting into a final set tiebreak, the first ever champions tiebreak at the Australian Open, the first to 10 pointer, and there was that magical moment where Poulter completely forgot the rules and started celebrating the win at 7-4 because she thought she'd won a tiebreak, and she actually clinches the fist, goes to the net, she's taken her visor off, she's taking all the applause, crowd thinks she's won as well because they don't know the rules. And then they say, no, you haven't won yet. She had to win 3 more points, and she did.
I told you, the problem is communicating it to the fans, this inconsistency. She was blooming good. She really was. And I agree with you. I'd all but written her off in that final set. In fact, as soon as she sort of went down in the second set, I went, oh no. By this point, we'd already seen two Brits lose.
Yes, because Harriet Dart lost 6-love, 6-love. And actually, I actually think that that's a harsh scoreline for her. I thought she was better than 6-love, 6-love today. I watched the match, and she had a lot of game points in that match and just didn't take them.
I think that's generous. I like Harriet Dart's game, and she's at the very beginning of her career, and there's immense improvements to make. I think her attitude is good. She's desperate to learn from it. She was appropriately gutted by what happened today, but
I thought she deserved a game or two. I really do. I think, you know, she missed out on a game or two, well, by 1 point.
That's tennis, David.
All right.
David's a nicer person than I am. I don't know if you've noticed that. That is a horribly brutal thing to say, isn't it? That she was worthy of a love and love defeat. But
Sharapova was good, actually.
She was really good, and she played it so well. Mm. She just kept the pressure on her all the time.
Yeah.
Katie Bolter, back to the winners.
Yeah, and Dan Evans.
Dan Evans. I was out there for... Now then, so I was sent out. Started set two. Dan took the first set 6-2 or something. Tatsuma Ito, his
7-5 first set.
7-5?
Mm, I think so.
Well, I missed that one.
Second one was 6-1.
So I was sent out at the start of the second set because Tatsuma Ito, his opponent, is basically on one leg.
Yes.
Okay, he's had two medical timeouts. He's getting treatment at every change of end. He's basically sort of at death's door. Right, so you and a cameraman head out courtside. It's only 44 degrees. You'll be fine. Have a seat courtside and just be on standby because Ito's going to retire any time, and then you can do your interview with Dan Evans. And about 15 hours later, Tatsuma Ito has, you know, had some sort of leg replacement that, you know, while he was in his bathroom break, he's got his fourth wind. And, you know, he looks like he's going to flip and win the tournament. Meanwhile, I've descended into a disgusting, sweaty, like, heap of misery. Cameraman Glenn, it's his first day working with British Eurosport. He's thinking, what is this? Can I work with the Spanish? And anyway, it was all worth it because Dan Evans, after his long three-set victory... took it on a tiebreak in the third. So really had to fight through that third set because, as discussed, Ito had some sort of leg replacement. He gave me a really emotional interview on
really?
The court.
What yeah. did he say?
He really did. And actually it reminded me that here 2 years ago after that, his first round victory over Cilic, I was a bit taken aback by...
Oh, he gave that delirious press conference, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Yeah, so he does. We know he has it in him.
So what was the gist of what he said to you?
I wasn't expecting to get it out of him I rarely do.
Well, the other interviews, because you did yours courtside, didn't you?
I did mine courtside.
Once he composed himself, I felt...
I did another one with him after the press conference, which was...
Rubbish.
Of lower broadcast quality.
Right, okay. So what was the first one? What were the gist?
He volunteered himself how awful the last 2 years have been. It's up to you, dear listener, whether you have any sympathy about... I don't think he's asking. He's not trying to elicit sympathy from people.
He tested positive, and that's just what happened.
But, he's also entitled to have emotions about that. And you know, he said he couldn't bring himself to watch the Australian Open last year. He said he didn't know who was playing ever because it was too painful for him. And I think we all think of Dan Evans as a joker that can take or leave tennis and, you know, wanes in his... I mean, he does wane in his commitment to it, but certainly we think of him as somebody that can take or leave tennis. Mm. And I don't think that's true. I think the correlation between sort of his love of the sport and his commitment to it is not as binary and simple as that. I think he really does love this sport and he loves playing it and he loved what happened today and he's going to bloom in love Wednesday night. I mean, it's going to be Wednesday night, isn't
it? I don't
know
whether it will be, you know.
Really?
That might be... I mean, don't forget, Nadal is in the same half as Federer.
Who does Nadal play? Struff.
They have to... They
no,
have
Struff
to share.
Lost to Ebden. Oh, it's an Aussie.
They have to share. And I would have thought that Nadal will be in that.
Can I just say one thing? Right, just the fact that I've said Struff there, it's reminded me, all four... semi-finalists, I believe, from Auckland have lost.
Yeah, Norrie lost today.
Yeah. Tennis Sangren lost, Struff lost, and one other as well. And Cam Norrie, he wasn't happy about the lack of leniency in the scheduling for players that have
That's interesting.
Played
but
on the
that shows the
before.
Challenge, doesn't it? Again,
does.
Going deep the week before. Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how Petra Kvitova and Ash Barty and all those players
very
get along.
Very interesting, yeah. Anyway.
Federer won through, so Federer against Dan Evans. Federer, I think, was pretty comfortable, wasn't he?
I believe Istomin was a little bit injured as well. So, I mean, talk about cards stacked against you.
It's rare that Federer feels like a real footnote. it just didn't feel important at the time.
My brother texted me tonight and said, if this is what they're doing for Andy Murray's last match, can you imagine what they'll do for Roger Federer's?
Yeah, true. I'm quite pleased in the end that Murray went on that court. That ended up being perfect.
And he asked for it.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It was a couple of the writers that told me that. It was obviously something that he had said to them off the record or whatever. But
that's good. I'm pleased that we know that.
Yeah.
Nadal looked decent. I thought he was facing a guy in James Duckworth who just went for it. Absolutely went for it. He was serving a volley and he was cracking shots. You just pulled a face as if to say, I'm not sure he did look that good.
I mean, James Duckworth, how low must his confidence have been before this match? He, 2 weeks ago, lost to a guy who's subsequently announced his retirement due to not being able to play tennis.
Who's that?
Well, Andy Murray.
Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, forgot him. Yeah.
I mean, that's a
he's
bit
quite
of a,
good though.
It's a bit of a blow, isn't it? Andy Murray's come in and gone. Like, I just can't beat anyone of note anymore. So,
it's not quite as brutal as that.
I mean,
that's the gist.
Put yourself in James Duckworth's shoes. It's a blow, isn't it?
Yeah, I liked watching James Duckworth tonight. He was a really spectacular player.
It wasn't tonight. That was about 400 years ago as well.
Yeah, well,
anyway,
it was earlier in the day, yeah.
I just don't think we learned that much about when Nadal's
I mean, I'd agree with that. I mean, that is true. Sometimes you can get a result.
I didn't see anything hugely worrying.
No, I take the point. Tsitsipas won through after losing the first set. Ooh. Dimitrov won through after winning the first set. I'm quite excited about this.
He's making a believer results. Out of David Law again.
Yeah, he is. Grad Mats, what else has happened today?
There have been a couple of interesting women's results, haven't there? Gerges lost.
Can't remember.
She did, yes. Can I just say, as I come to you, Andy Murray has been on Instagram Live.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Sitting in the middle of a court, I think the Melbourne Arena, and just turning it round and waving at the...
Should we pause our recording and get ourselves over there?
And waving at the camera with a sad face.
Oh,
just you know, you see sometimes in of a football
match,
players
just... That's what I needed, more of Andy Murray's sad face.
Players just sitting on the court afterwards and Murray's doing that.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah.
Which cricketer was it that weed on the pitch after an Ashes victory?
This podcast taking a turn that I wasn't expecting.
Who was it that did that? I'm going to say Monty Panesar.
I really don't want to know about this.
Did you see Monty Panesar on Mastermind the other day?
I did. Yeah,
that was funny.
Yeah. This isn't the cricket podcast. Goodness.
I did. I mean,
how's your day?
Cricket fan or not, if you haven't seen Monty Panesar on Mastermind,
you must check
that out.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, all right, all right. Anything else tennis-related, Australian Open
related? Favourite part of my day was following the Greek fans all the way from Court 3 all the way over to the Melbourne Arena, which is miles away from anywhere. And they marched into the stadium where Maria Sakkari was playing. And all along the way, they were just chanting and chanting. And I'm getting quite excited about the possibility of Tsitsipas and Sakkari doing bits here and the Greeks lapping it up.
Yeah.
And they've known one another, those two, since they were little, weren't they? Aww. They're a lovely little story. Sakkari beat Ostapenko today.
Yeah.
Yes. When was the last time Ostapenko won a match?
It's been a while. Beijing
a while.
Was.
Yeah. She doesn't look dialed in to me.
And on the subject of Grad Mats' adventures of the day, can I just draw your attention to Grad Mats Melbourne, which is going to be a daily blog entry. Catherine and I have had an advanced look at the first entry, and I tell you what, folks, it is well worth a read. You're going to love it, right? It's not out yet. It's coming soon. We'll let you know. But yeah, that's coming every single day during the Australian Open. I say this. He's just done his first 18-hour day.
Yeah. And he's David Law's mouth writing checks that... grad Matt's constitution can't cash.
he's full of beans at the moment, but you know, knock
how many
a few
times
more of
I
these.
I have to tell you, David, human beings require sleep every now and then.
I'm just making the calculations in my head. It's 1:30 now, half an hour back.
Jay Conter first on tomorrow. Thanks very much.
that's 11:00 local time. Oh, I've got to be on the radio at 9 a.m. That's 7 hours away.
You don't need any sleep.
At least you don't have to do hair and makeup.
We haven't even uploaded this yet. Crikey.
I bet all the listeners are loving listening to us complain about our schedules at the Australian Open in Melbourne.
Sorry, everybody.
Thing is, Grand Slams are supposed to build, right, to this magnificent crescendo.
Let's go home.
Where the hell is it going
to
go
from here? How are we going to top tonight?
I have to say, this has been the most incredible first day of a slam I've ever had. It's been one of the best days at a tournament I've ever had. I've just loved it. It's been an absolute privilege to be around today. So I think at that, is there anything else I have to say before I can go to bed?
Stritsova Putin saver handshake.
No, I didn't see that. What happened?
Tasty.
Is there a video
tasty
of that?
Tasty. And the comments after handshake when asked about it.
Right, let's end the podcast. I need to go and see this. Right, thanks very much, Catherine.
Apparently one of them squeezed too hard, and that was not
they?
To the other's liking.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Squeezed
right.
And held on, I think, aggressively.
This is superb. Yeah. Right, go on. Grab Matt, you get to bed. Catherine, you get to bed. Folks, you've got 12 hours to get your Kickstarter backing in so that you can just do your bit and you have your name on the backers page. I'm not going to say it again. It's the last show. Go and do it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.